is a very personal introduction. Normally they're pro forma introductions, a person's name, a title. Rabbi Stein from Rehovos is a childhood friend, and our paths crossed many times in life. We have both had Rabbi Berman as Rosh Hashiva, very good friends, as you know, younger age, then we met again. Then Rabbi Stein is in many ways my role model as a Rav. I thought he was crazy, I could become a Rav. What are you becoming a Rav for? And then Hashem had the last laugh, as usual. Rabbi Stein is very involved in his shul. He really was, maybe after Rabbi Bowman, was the first shul, perhaps, in Eretz Yisrael to take on the Anglos and to work with them and to have a different kind of American Haredi, as we say. He was, I think Rehovos was the role model after Rabbi Bowman and Rabbi Stein, and everything else flowed from that, including Ramat Beit Shemesh, and the roles, the model shuls we have here, is really Rabbi Stein was a pioneer in that. He's very, very active in the world of kashrus, very knowledgeable. He's from the Lower East Side, so he brooks no nonsense. So he tells it like it is, and he's very knowledgeable, he has very close connections with all the Gufei Kashrus in the world, especially the Star K. He's their top man here in Eretz Yisrael for what they do here. And Rabbi Stein, I give you Rabbi Stein.
Thank you, everyone. I want to start with a few disclaimers. First of all, Bereshus Harav, I'm not going to be passing any Yishailis here, because in many ways, Rabbi Williams is my Rebbe, and I don't want to be Chayiv Misa at this point in my life. And so I'm not going to be passing any Shailis, so I will tell you the Metzias as it is. But for Shailis, you have a very Choshev Rav here, and you can ask him. And if he wants to ask me, he can also, but I'm not going to directly answer any Shailis here, number one. Number two, I would like to say that I was Rav Amashir in many, many different Mashrei Tov in the past. I haven't worked in Shechita every day for a number of years, so the information I have may be a little bit stale. I have been in Mashrei Tov in the past year a few times, but I do not work regularly in Mashrei Tov now. I do work in kashrus, but not in the Mashrei Tov right this second. So things may have changed a little bit. Although once again, I have been in a Mashrei Tov, in a few Mashrei Tov the past year. So I think that I'm more or less up to date. Let me just say one more thing about kashrus of chickens and bechlal, about everything. When we see on a package of chickens, kosher lemahadrin, the question is, what does that mean exactly, kosher lemahadrin? Now, let me just say a few things about kashrus bechlal in this country. There is a law that's called Chok Ona Ala Kashrut, which means that you are not allowed to say something is kosher, which is not kosher. What is kosher? Who defines what kosher is? That's the Rabbanan Rashid Israel. They are the definition of kosher. If they say it's kosher, it's kosher. If they don't say it's kosher, it's not kosher. And they will give an issur for many other gufei kashrut, many badatsim, and many different kashriyot around the world, to give also kashrut. But really, they are the official ketovah to kashrut. If they don't say something is kosher, it's not kosher. And they have a kosher, besides being a halachic definition, is also a legal definition. You can't say kosher or put a kosher symbol on anything without the ishur of Israel. And if you'll notice on many different products, especially in chutzaritz, it'll say kosher bashkachad blank, be sure about other Israel, which means that they have given sanction that they actually accept this kashrus. It doesn't really mean too much, I have to say, but they do give sanction. And something that is not kosher is against the law to say it's kosher. To say something is mahadrin, there is no law. So whatever is mahadrin, you know, that really doesn't mean anything at all. You can say mahadrin about anything. The only place in Shulchan Aruch says that something is mahadrin is Milchas Chanukah, and it actually doesn't have really a halachic description either. And so what kosher mahadrin is really very much open to the person who's printing the package. You know, one time there was a big sign in a certain person's doorway, the chief rabbi of America and Canada. So somebody saw it, and he knocked on the door, and he said, excuse me, but who made you the chief rabbi of America and Canada? So he said, the sign maker. So the same thing holds true about kosher lemahadrin. That's exactly what it means. Kosher lemahadrin is really not at all mechayev anyone or anything. And if you want to say kosher lemahadrin, you can. There are no standards. There's nobody who says something has to be a certain way because it's kosher lebahadrin. And actually, most chickens in Eretz Yisrael, it says kosher lebahadrin. What that means, nobody really knows, and it doesn't really make too much of a difference. Okay, so I'm going to talk basically about what the difference is between what we call glatt, maybe. There are certain things that are called, that have different words, maybe. But there are certain hechsherim that are called mahadrin or glatt kosher chickens, and I'll talk about what that means exactly. Now, I just want to, before I start, I want to give a little bit of a definition about the difference between the kashrus of chickens and meat and things like that and all other types of kashrus. Most types of kashrus, if you have kashrus on pasta or on ketchup or on mustard or on many, many different things in the world, if it comes in kosher, it goes out kosher. You have to make sure that the ingredients are okay and there's no problem with bishalakum, but nothing really has to be done to the thing in order to make the kosher. In chickens, there's something has to be done. I remember last time I gave a shiur, this year, I think more or less the same thing about how many years ago? 10 years ago? 8 years ago? 5 years ago? I'm not sure. A couple of years ago. And I said this idea, I think it's true then, I think it's true now. You know, I used to be in a shul in America, they used to daven 60 minutes from Matovu until Hashem Echad. Now, the saying Shulchan Aruch, he can't daven 16 minutes between Atov and Hashem Echad. It doesn't say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch how long it has to take to daven. But probably a person who takes 16 minutes to daven, he is not saying every single word. He's probably slurring over certain things. He may be skipping certain things. He may not be doing things exactly the way it's supposed to be done. And so, you know, when you ask somebody, how long does it have to take you to daven? I would be very hard put to say it has to take X amount of time. But, you know, it depends how quickly you talk. If you come from the east side, it'll take you less time. If you come from South Carolina, it'll probably take you more time. But it depends how quickly you can talk and how exactly you can enunciate words and how much kavanah you have, how quickly you have kavanah. It depends on many, many different things. But if you do it too quickly, if you do it very, very quickly, the odds are you're not going to really do it kamosh tzarich. And kashering chickens and doing and making sure something is kosher, in meat especially, it really depends on how it's done. I remember when I was a little boy, very little boy, my grandmother used to kasher chickens at home, and that's the way it used to be done. And I think when they started to kasher chickens, that really is supposed to be done. You go home and you take a chicken, you make sure, you look around and you put the salt on all the places and you check all the internal organs and you look at everything and you make sure everything is done kamosh tzarich. And I remember my grandfather used to go to the shlachtos in the Lower East Side, under the Williamsburg Bridge, and he would check a knife and he would give it to the shaykhet and he would shecht. They wouldn't shecht, you know, 15 birds a minute. That's not the way it was at those times. So there's a very, very big difference the way it's done. To say something is treif, I would not say that any kashrus in Eretz Yisrael is treif. I'm not saying you can't eat it, but there are definitely differences. I think when a person buys a chicken, he should buy a chicken that was done in the way that if he was doing it himself, he would do it that way. A few years ago, I actually wanted to make a chabura of kashering chickens with the women in my shul. And I suggested that it should be done, and one of the women said, "Why would you want to do that?" And that sort of killed the whole project, and nobody decided that they wanted to do it at that point. Well, it's not an objection. It was just I realized that there was no that the hey anut to that idea was not going to be very great. So I sort of, but I think it's a very good idea actually. I'm not suggesting we should do that. But what I am suggesting is that we buy a kashrus that is not kosher, but it's kosher in the way that we would like to buy it. That we would like to, if we were kashering chickens. And we were processing chickens in our own house and doing things the way we want to do it. That should be done that way, and it shouldn't be done in a way that is chatlap, and you're just getting everything done and throwing things around and doing it. That it should be kosher b'dievet. Things cost money when you do a chila. It takes more time. It takes more practice. It takes more expert manpower to do it. And therefore, things are much more expensive when they are done kamosh tzarich. Then when they're done, once again, not treif, but not kamosh tzarich. And there's a very big difference in the different ways that people, that kashrus is done. Okay, so I want to do, I want to explain basically the different problems in the shlavim, in the different places that kashrus is done in chickens. And I also discuss a little bit about the differences between the hechsherim in Eretz Yisrael and America. Let me just say one more story before I start. About 25 years ago, I went to a I'll say the plaintiff. One more thing I want to say. I'm not going to discuss any specific kashriyot here. I don't think it's proper for me to do that. First of all, I don't want to get into trouble, and I want people to slash my tires before I get out. And it's also not. I'm not going to officially sanction any specific kashriyot or say that any specific kashriyot is not good. But I'll speak generally about the levels of kashriyot that we have in Eretz Yisrael. I'll also say one word about the kashrus, the difference between kashrus in Eretz Yisrael and the kashrus in America. I remember I once went with a very, very chashuv Rav Machshir in America, this was about 25 years ago, to one of the shlachtos in Eretz Yisrael. And when I went there, I was shocked at the kashrus there. I was shocked at the way they were doing it. They were, the Rav Machshir said, save me, help me, I can't do anything here. The only thing I can do is close the whole place down, and I can't do that too often either. And, you know, chickens are jumping into the kluvim without getting shechted, and it's terrible, terrible, terrible. And so I came out after and I saw the place is really not up to level. I had never seen such a terrible mashrita in my life. We came out, and this Rav, very chashuv a Rav, he asked me, what do you think? So I said, that was terrible. So he said, that's better than any kashrus in America. So I was very shocked. And I at that point, they said, well, obviously, the best he was very involved in kashrus, by the way, very involved in kashrus of chickens also. And I was under the impression at that point, which I think was true, that the best kashrus in America is worse than the worst kashrus in Eretz Yisrael. I have been told now, recently, especially when I appear the Shira, I actually went to a few people and asked them about the kashrus in America, and I understand that kashrus in America has improved greatly, very, very greatly. I know this because I know that in other branches of kashrus, it has improved very greatly. I know it gabei bdikat tola'im and gabei many, many different things, that kashrus in America has improved very, very greatly in the past few years, and I'm assuming that is correct. The person I know is who I trust very much, and he told me different things about the kashrus. He asked some very, very specific questions, and he gave me very specific answers. Maybe I'll talk about them as we go on. But the kashrus in America today is not too bad. It's really, I think it's more or less up to the regular Israeli standard, although it may not be quite up to the really, really Mahadran Israeli standard, but the kashrus is not too bad in America right now. And so that's basically the story in America. Now, let me just start the kashrus story at the very, very beginning, when the chicks are hatched, actually before the chicks are hatched, from the eggs that are used for the kashrus. There are certain things called inoculations. When you, just like a baby, gets different inoculations in order to make sure it doesn't get different diseases, so too the chicks get different inoculations. Now, actually today, the inoculations are very much done in the eggs, which is much less of a problem. Legabe kashrus, it's put into the eggs and doesn't really have any problem of puncturing any of the internal organs. It used to be done after the chicks were hatched, at the age of maybe a day or two. They used to give them an inoculation in the neck. It was a very, 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 very tiny needle, I have to say. But the chicks' necks are also very, very tiny. And to say that it never, ever got into the veshet is not 100% clear. And so the Mahadran Kashriyot always made sure there was a mashgiach around to make sure that the inoculation was done correctly. Besides that first inoculation, in many chickens, there are inoculations after that are done. In chickens, and especially in turkeys, there are many diseases that happen, and therefore, chickens are very often inoculated afterwards also. And in the Mahadran Shchitot, they send the Mashgiach down to make sure that the injections are done kamo shetzarich, that they don't do it in a way that punctures different organs. Remember, a chicken is not all that big. The chicken, especially at that point, when it's 2 weeks old, is probably around maybe a couple of hundred grams altogether, and it's, you know, about as big as the palm of your hand. And if you have a needle and you stick it into the chicken's stomach, the odds that you're going to puncture some of the vital organs is pretty good. And unless you know exactly what you're doing and exactly where you're doing it, it can be a problem. Now, of course, the people who are doing the inoculations are also not very interested in killing the chickens or in harming the chickens or in puncturing vital organs. But if it's done by people, very often it used to be done by the kibbutzim, by the chavrei kibbutz, and you know, chavrei kibbutz does it, he wants to get out as quickly as possible, and he's not really very, very human in doing these things. And sometimes it's not done correctly. Sometimes they'll bring different organizations that do it, and they have these Thailandis or these, I don't know what, Eritreans who do it, and they really also don't really care about it too much. And if you don't have a trained staff of people who are doing the inoculations, then it can really cause a problem in the in puncturing internal organs, and that would render the chicken treif. Once again, they don't do it purposely, but it can happen. And in the Mahadran Hashgoch is to make sure that first of all, the tzvatot that know what they're doing and that they do it properly. They make sure that the needles are not too long. They make sure that the needle is done, it's put into a place which does not have too much of a problem, and that there's a very small possibility that the needle will puncture any of the vital internal organs, and it's done that way. The not Mahadran, now remember that they send these mashgichim to all the lahakot, all of the different that they have, and so not all of them are really done for Mahadran. They want to make sure that they have enough birds to go around. So this is also part of the reason why Mahadran chickens are so expensive, is because you have to send mashgichim very often to places where you don't actually get the birds bichlal. Especially since when you have a lot of inoculations, very often the birds are passed completely because you have too many inoculations and the odds that you're going to have that much chalak is not that great. And so, generally speaking, but they'll send the mashgiach to just about everything because they want to make sure that they have enough birds to go around. So, when you have only, let's say, five shitot a month, but you have to send the mashgiach to 20 places, then it's costing money. You have to make sure that the mashgiach of all those 20 places is paid for by those five shechitot. Yes.
I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. Are inoculations, are they like vaccinations? Wow.
Vaccinations.
And
that's
who
right.
does it? Like the farmer or the vet? Who does
no,
it?
No, well, it's not the vets, it's not the farmers. They have tzvatot of workers who do it, generally speaking. They'll bring people in. Sometimes they're very well trained, sometimes they're not so well trained. If they're very well trained, and you have a right amount of a needle, it's done kamosh tzarich, it usually doesn't cause a problem. If they're not well trained, it can cause a problem.
The Rav HaMakshir is not involved in this problem.
What?
The Rav HaMakshir.
Well, in the Mahadran Hechsherim, they are involved, and they send the Mashgiach down and they make sure it's done kamosh tzarich. In the Rav Mahadran Hechsherim, they don't, because they assume it's done okay. I'm not saying it's usher, by the way, because the truth is that the odds that if you have a needle that goes into the lungs and the antibacteria goes into the lungs, the chicken is not going to last too long, and so the odds that it's going to really cause it, you have to go in and go out, it's not necessarily a problem. And the rove, the vast majority of the chickens are not really pagu up from it, because if it was, then they would lose a lot of money. They're not going to do it that way. But there is a possibility. And if they do it in a way that's not correct, so a lot of chickens are going to die, which I guess is not kedai for them to maybe make a special effort to make sure that the people are trained well, because maybe it'll offset the price of the amount of chickens that die. But there is a possibility, and the Mahadran Shkoches would send the Mashgiach down to the Mishakim to make sure it's not kamosh tzarich.
Excuse me.
Okay. Yes?
What is the inoculation against?
Against many different diseases. Newcastle and pneumonia and a lot of different diseases.
And also, it's universal in Israel that all
Most of the Mahadran Hechsherim will send people down to make sure that the vaccination is done correctly. I can't say every single one of them does, but it's a general rule they do. Now, the not Mahadran Hechsherim do not. They never do, because they say it's okay, but go to your tear, and that's all.
My husband was a shofet, and did this happen more recently? Did it start 30 years
ago? In America, they do not do it. I asked somebody, and they do not do it. He said that, generally speaking, the vaccinations are not done after the chick is hatched. They do it in America when the chicks are still in the egg, and it doesn't really cause a problem with the egg. They found ways to do it. This is very recent. I think that in America they never did it, but recently he claims that it's not such a problem. I didn't go down to the Mashaitot in America. What I'm saying from America is really secondhand information. I don't have any first-hand information in America. I was never in a Mashaitot in America, so I really can't say, but I did speak to people I trust in America also. Okay, now.
Thank you.
Okay, now, all right. Now, another problem in chickens is the loading onto the into the kluvim, into the pens of the that they take to the mashrita. Theoretically, it can be done in a way that doesn't cause any problems. It depends how these pens are actually made. It used to be, I think it's better now. I just recently saw a place that was done very automatically. They have this combine that sort of harvests the chickens and puts them in really automatically. But I don't think it's universally done that way. If you have people who get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to put chickens into these little kluvim, the main thing they're interested in getting back to bed, and they want to do it as quickly as possible.
What's the problem in the
kluvim? I'll explain. When you take a chicken, you throw it into the pen. There's something called an afula, which means that if you take a chicken and you tie the legs up or you do something to give it a very severe wound in the head, it can cause a problem of trephis, because an afula is a trepha. And when a chicken is hit in the head, or it's hit in a place which can cause a problem of trephis, then that is a problem of trephis. Now, it's not necessarily done that way. Do we have to assume it's done in a way that's not good? Probably not. And the Mahadran Hashem certainly do not do that. There are many Mahadran Hashem that will actually send somebody down to the Mishakim when they're being loaded to make sure it's done kamosha tzarich. What does it mean, done kamosha tzarich? They don't throw the chickens into the kluvim and, you know, hit the thing on the head and these chickens were, you know, lo'aleinu, they're not, it's not a good thing to be a chicken. Don't. We have to get a new, I don't know, that's not one something to be. But they don't treat them very gently, and they certainly, it's possible to cause tarfis. Kluvim also have also full the whole, when you take them, these big gigantic kluvim with like seven layers of seven komot, and sometimes they fall off the trucks, bichlal, and when they do that, so sometimes you just put them back on the trucks, so nobody knows about it, nobody cares about it. But if you have somebody making sure that it's done kamosh tzarich, now this does not happen all the time, obviously. It happens once and who knows how long. But it can happen, and it can cause a problem. In the Mahadran Hashem, they're much more particular of what to do. In the Mahadran Hashem, they assume everything is okay, and that's all that I call to say. All right. Now, let's get to the Mashrita. Now, the first and most important thing in Shchita is obviously the Shchita and the Shochtim. If you have a good Shochet, you're 80% of the way to having a good shechita, obviously. Shochet Yisod is supposed to be Yirei Shamayim. Unfortunately, I do not have any Yirei Shamayim meter. I really can't tell by looking at a person if he's a Yirei Shamayim or not. But when I was a Marla Machshir, I would always look at the Shochtim and see, first of all, what are they doing when they have a break? Do they learn Sfasemes? Do they say Tillim? Do they learn Pasha Shavua? Learn Daf Yomi? Or do they talk Lashon Hara? When they were talking Lashon Hara, I used to sort of weed them out, and I wouldn't have them shechting for me. And that's generally speaking, when you talk about the shochtim of the Mahadran Hashkochis, usually the shochtim are of a higher caliber. I remember going to Mashrita, a regular Mashrita, and I felt like it was an Alcatraz. Now, was I an Alcatraz? No. And were they really terrible? Maybe not. They could have been very fine people, and they just looked like the Frey Alcatraz. But I certainly came out with a very not noach feeling when I came out of that Chedra Shochtim. And when you go into Chedra Shochtim, or the Mahadran Hashkochis, generally speaking, you go in feeling that, you know, these guys are doing Kamosh Tzarich, in the break they're learning Sfasemes, they're learning, they're saying Tillim, they're learning Parsha Shavua, they're learning Daf Yomi. You don't have to be a big lambda. I'm saying you have to learn very, very complicated things. But there certainly are things that you should be doing. You're not talking Lashon Hara, and not going into the politics, and not talking about the soccer games, and I don't know what else. And it certainly is indicative for Shochet, what he looks like, and how he acts in the Beit HaShechita, whether he's Yirei Shamayim or not. And it's, of course, very important. The most important thing, probably, of Shechita is that the Shochet should be Yirei Shamayim. And if he's Yirei Shamayim, you're 80% there. And if you're not, then you're in trouble. Yes?
I just want to ask you,
the regular Rabbanut Shechitas are not, well, you see, once again, as I said at the beginning of the Shiur, Mahadrin does not have any definition officially. There's no law that says somebody has to be Mahadrin. Just about every chicken in Eretz Yisrael is called Mahadrin. Why? Because that's what they say. What does it mean? Mahadrin doesn't have any meaning. Halachic doesn't have any meaning either. It means that you light, everybody lights in Chanukah in their houses. That's all it means, really. In Shechita, in chickens, you know, you look in the Shulchan Aruch for Mahadrin, it doesn't appear. What does it mean, really? I don't know. It doesn't have any meaning. And therefore, when a chicken says kosher l'rav mahadrin, it doesn't really mean anything. Regular rabbanu chickens, in a regular hechsher, when I'm talking about mahadrin, the mahadrin hashgochis, I'm not talking about regular rabbanu chickens. The regular chickens, I'm right now classifying as being not mahadrin. Today they're called glat, which also has no meaning in a chicken, because no chicken is glat, because glat means it's smooth, and chickens are always attached to the lungs, so to the the beta chazeh. So really, chicken can't be really glat. It's not possible to be glat, but they call it glat because you know what glat kosher meat is. So they sort of make a tzad hashov at the chickens also, and they say it's also called glat. It's not glat, but it's more or less glat. But there are different hashgachas. What people know are what we call the mahadrin hashgachas, quote unquote. Those are the mahadrin hashgachas. Everybody knows about it. I don't want to mention exactly what they are, but everybody knows the mahadrin hashgachas are. The regular rabbanut chickens are not what I'm calling mahadrin, okay? Now, so the first and most important thing is that a shochet should be a Yerei Shamayim. Once again, how do you know? It's not so easy to find out. But besides that, there are also other things that are important when you're talking about a shochet. Number one, how long does he work for? How often does he take a break? How long does it break for? In the Mahadrin Hashgachis, once again, Mahadrin, I'm talking about the better Hashgachis, as a general rule, for every place on the line, usually a line, I mean, there's a, when you shecht, usually have, let's say, 4 or 6, sometimes 12 and 15, it depends on the Mashrita, sometimes it's a very big Mashrita. Usually the Mahadrin Hashgachis, they do not have a very big Mashrita for different reasons, then I'll talk about it later. But as a general rule, if I'm talking too fast, by the way, you can slow me down. I come from the east side. You're probably used to hearing people from the east side, Rabbanim from the east side here. But if I'm talking too fast, you can just slow me down a little bit. B'chol ofen, you have 6 shochetim on a line, and for each shochet on the line, in the Mahadrin Hashgachis, you have another shochet who's resting. Whereas you have 6 shochetim on the line, you bring 12 shochetim. So that, for every half hour that a shochet is shechting, he's resting for half an hour. He goes into the cheder shochetim, he prepares his knife, he rests a little bit, he says some tillim, he learns a little bit, hopefully, if he's a good shochet.
He brings his own knife?
Yeah, he brings his own
knife. Or you provide it?
No, the shochet, as a general rule, brings his own knife. We'll talk about that in a minute, okay? That's a very, very important point. We'll talk about knives after we talk about shochetim, okay? But that's one of the topics I have.
Why is it important that it's his own knife?
What?
Why is it important that it's his own knife?
I'll explain what... Knives are a very, very important part of shechita. I'll talk about it in 2 minutes, okay? Or 5 minutes. Anyway, so the first thing you have to know is how long the shochet is resting for. In the regular shechitas, as a general rule... they would have for every 2 places in the line, they have 3 shochtim. In other words, let's say a shochet would work for 45 minutes, and he would rest for 22 and a half minutes, and then the other shochet would go in. And so he would not be resting half the time, he'd be resting 1/3 of the time. That's usually the way they do it. And of course, one of the main points of a shochet is you shouldn't be too tired. After you shecht a whole bunch of chickens, your hand gets tired. As your hand gets tired and you get tired, there's a much greater possibility that you're not going to shecht the Moshe Tzarich. Shechting is a very, very delicate action. You have to make sure you're not dolraces, no shia, no chaloda, no hagroma, no ikor. You have to make sure there are many different things you have to do with shechita. And if you don't do it right, then you make an avela. And that's certainly not what we want. So if you're rested and your hand is rested and you are rested, you'll be able to be your mind is on the ball, your hand is on the ball, and you'll do a good shechit. If you're not, then you're gonna mess up and it's not gonna be good. Remember, the shochtim are shechting between 12 and 18 chickens a minute. That's very, very fast. You know, 12 chickens a minute. I'll talk about that very soon. But b'chol ofen, the shochtim are shechting. In the Mahadrin Shechitis, the maximum that a shochet checks is 12 chickens a minute. 12 chickens a minute means that every 5 seconds they're shechting a chicken. 5 seconds. Now, to shecht the chicken in Eretz Yisrael, the guy gives you the chicken, you have to take it, you have to make you have to put the neck back, you're making a tfisa, you're holding the kanafayim, you do the tfisa on the chicken, and you're shechting, you take the chicken and you throw it into the, into the kluv, and then you take another one. Now, those actions are actions that take time. If you're doing it every 5 seconds, you are, your hand gets very, very tired, number one. You have to be on the ball. If you're not on the ball, it's not going to be good. And if you stand in the line for 2 hours, you're not going to be on the ball. Your hands are going to be very, very tired. And the odds that you're going to have a problem in the Shechita are very much greater.
If he doesn't do it properly, the Shechita, he has to make the decision in addition to the 5 seconds, or yeah. Someone else.
No. He's on the line. You don't have somebody else on the line as a general
rule. So he makes the decision.
If he really makes a mistake and he makes a treif, there's a kluv right next to shochtim for the treifis, and he's supposed to throw it in.
But he's noger he's noger
right.
Bedavar.
If he sends 30 chickens a day to the
he's
treifis,
out.
He's not going to make it too long.
So
and he knows that also, remember. So, you know, Shomer doesn't want to mess things up, especially in turkeys. He really doesn't want to mess things up because turkey is very expensive. And remember also, in America, a treif chicken and a kosher chicken, there's not all that much difference. In Eretz Yisrael, there's a very big difference in price. And if a shochet messes up, he's not going to last too long, and he knows it.
So what's the presumption? In his favor or against him? Because
we always assume that the shochet is doing a good job. Whichever shochet it is, if not, if you find a shochet that's not doing a good job, you try to get him out. Now, so number one, the question is, how long is he on the line? As a general rule, the Hadrash Shechita Eretz Yisrael.
What he's asking is, if the Shochet knows that he won't last very long, if he messes up a lot of the Shechitas, then it's in his best favor, his best interest to not say it's trade.
That's right.
So hopefully he's Yirei Shemayim.
That is correct. That's why it's so important to have a Shochet Yirei Shemayim. When you have a sofer who's writing tefillin and he makes a mistake in the, you know, in the first parish, and all of a sudden
same
the last parish he discovers it, if he doesn't say this is everything is possible, so he loses, so he's going to make a lot of money. That's why you have to be a Yirei Shemayim. You have to be a Shemayim for your sofer. You have to be a Yirei Shemayim for your shochet. You have to be a Yirei Shemayim. If you're not a Yirei Shemayim, then forget it. Then everybody's in trouble. You're right. That's why it's so important for a shochet to be a Yirei Shemayim. That is correct. Because there's really no way, you know, if a shochet is really messing up constantly, and he'll probably be found out eventually.
But there's someone who's mashgiach who's checking randomly that they're.
You can't really check because the sofoshel davar, it doesn't usually look any different. A kosher shechita. For a person, for example, drasa means you're not going back and forth with the knife, but you're pressing down too much. Now. Who knows? How do you know that? You stop in the middle. It's probably Shia, right? You stop for 1 second in the middle of Shechita. Aloha lemaisa. Now, who's going to know? Nobody's going to know if you do it. You know, you didn't complete the Shechita, and if you realize you completed it right after you finish. Nobody's going to find out about that. So, if you're not in Rishon Mayim, it's going to go through, and then I call you a Beseder. If you are, you'll throw into the treif. If you do it too often, it's not tov. You know, it's not going to be good for you. So the shochtim are not going to do it very often if they know it's good for them. On the other hand, if you have to make sure that a shochet is well rested and he's on the ball and he's not working too long. Now another thing is that the question is how long in the day can a shochet shechit? In the Mahadrit Shechitas today in Eretz Yisrael, usually they don't let them work for more than 6 hours at a time. 6 hours is really 3 hours because they're resting half and they're working half.
A third. Resting a third.
No, that's a non. That Mahadran Shechitas. The Mahadran Shechitas, we said a half. Okay? In the Mahadran Shechitas, they work half. Okay? Now, so, you know, they're obviously doing much less of an output. Also, in the Mahadran Shechitas, generally speaking, they're shechting 12 words a minute. In the Mahadran Shechitas, they could check much more, up to, you know, 14, 15, 16, sometimes even 18 chickens a minute. And you know, we have that much less time. You know, if you're shechting 20 chickens a minute, you have 3 seconds instead of 5 seconds, which is much less time. Now, there's a difference between Shechita in Eretz Yisrael and in America. That's something that is done, I think, almost universally. In Eretz Yisrael, the shochtim hold the chicken in their hands. They hold it in their left hands, and they shecht their right hand. Okay, they hold the whole chicken. A chicken weighs 1.5 to 2 kilos. After you're shechting 10, 12 chickens a minute for half an hour, you get pretty tired. And that's why they want them to rest after half an hour. In America, they aren't holding the chicken. They put it on sort of a stender, and they do something called a cup tfisa, which means that they're holding the neck, but they're not really holding the whole chicken. In America, they taina, it's better. In Eretz Yisrael, certainly in a Mahadran Shechitas, it's yehorig val yavar to do it. What's better? I don't know. I learned my Shechita in Eretz Yisrael. And the Shochtim Yisrael say, it's terrible in America. They put it on the Goyim holding the Shechita. If a guy is holding the chicken and he pulls it a little bit, say a problem with Drosa, and then the whole chicken can be an Avela. On the other hand, I mean, there's definitely, and turkeys, nobody holds a turkey, obviously, right? It's 18 kilos. Nobody's really holding a turkey. I remember one time, there's a story of a long time ago, they were shechting rakim. What the rakim is, a chicken that is used for, it's the mother of all the chickens. In other words, they have what's called a lakat aim. That lakat aim, they lay the eggs that the chickens that we eat are hatched from. And eventually, they shecht those chickens also. You know, they lasted longer. The chickens that we eat, by the way, are around 6 weeks old. But these chickens can be a year and a half old, and they shecht them eventually. They're much bigger, obviously, the 2.5 kilos a piece. And the one who's giving me the hechsher wanted the shochet to hold the chicken also. And I said, b'shum panim ba'ofen, a shochet cannot hold a chicken like that, even if he only shechts 9 chickens a minute. It's not a normal shechita. And he was mash omedos. And I thought, look, if you do it that way, I'm not coming, and that's all. And I fought with him, and myself, he was more than it's not a good idea. And we didn't do it. But what I mean to say is that ad kidei kach, the hashgachas in Eretz Yisrael is so much against having a guy hold the bird that even if it's ridiculous, they won't do it because you can't have a shechita if you're not holding the whole bird because maybe the guy will pull it. In turkeys, okay, they put it down on a shtender more or less, and they shecht it. I'm not saying in America it's not done correctly. In America, by the way, turkeys very often are in a line, and they'll put the turkeys, the live turkeys, on a line, and they'll be moving, and the shochet will shecht it on the line. I don't know if they still do that. They did it a few years ago. Some shochetim told me it's great. You know, what's the problem? On the other hand, you know, if you're not looking very carefully, you theoretically the one line is moving all the time. So theoretically, you can take the head of the neck of the turkey and hold it like this, and while the top of it is moving and shecht it and keep going. But if you're not careful and the line is moving, then you have a problem with drosa, and the turkey is going to be nevela. It's a machlokes among the shochetim which way is better. I learned in Eretz Yisrael, somehow I feel it's better in Eretz Yisrael, but I'm not saying in America it's not good. That's a difference in the way that it's shechted. But b'chol ofen, they claim that because the shochet is not holding the chicken, they can stay in the line much, much longer. And in America, they stay in the line for an hour and a half, and they have a break for an hour and a half. They claim it's much, much easier for the shochet. You know, he goes back and he changes his knives, and I recall the Seder, and in Eretz Yisrael, you're going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and it's not really good. Okay, b'chol ofen, that's the way it's done here, and it's done well here. I'm not saying they do a good job here, and I'm going to say that. Okay,
b'chol ofen. You do it like you do it in America here?
Not that I know of. Even the not mahavdin shechitis, generally speaking, the shochet holds a chicken.
All the same.
Yeah, as a general rule. Okay, now. Let's talk about the knives. The knives are also a very, very important part of the process. Now, first of all, to check a knife is a very, very very difficult task. You have to know how to check a knife. And if you don't learn how to check a knife well, and you don't have also very, very sensitive fingers, not really fingers, but fingernails. You're not going to do it well. You have to grow fingernails, kamosh tzarich. You have to do kamosh tzarich. I have to say, I learned how to check knives from some of the biggest experts in Eretz Yisrael, and I really did not like to check because my hargosha was not really, really good. I did what I had to, but I used to like somebody else to check because my hargosha wasn't the greatest, and I would find things, but you know. Of course, I was a Litvak. When I first came to Shechita, the only people who work in Shechita, generally speaking, are Hasidim and Tzvardim. And when I came to to be the Rav, they wanted to kill me. That was the whole story. But Cholofen, you know, they wanted to show me that I know what he was doing, and I like to keep away from Shechitim as much as I can.
With the knife or without the knife.
Yeah, that's right. So to check a knife is very difficult. It's also not only very difficult to check a knife, it's also very difficult to make a knife. To make a knife means you have to get a knife that is completely and totally without any pigimot. A pigimot can be a very, very, very small thing. And if you can feel a very small pigimot with your fingernail, and as the knife is not really chad v'chalak, it is a problem. There used to be one of the main machlokos, by the way, historically speaking, between the Hasidic Shechita and the Misnagdish Shechita was in knives. Because to make a knife once upon a time that was chad v'chalak which means that it was perfectly and completely without any pigimot. And also chad, remember, a knife that's very, very sharp is also very, very thin at the tip. That's what makes it sharp. Now, if it's very thin at the tip, that also means by definition that it is very, very easy to get a pigima. Because it's very, very thin, it's not very strong. And once upon a time, it was almost impossible to have a knife that was really chad and really chalak. And therefore, there was a machlokes between the Hasidim and the Sagdim. What is it better? It's better to have a knife that's chad and not chalak, or chalak and not chad? And the Hasidim said it was better to have a knife that was chad and not chalak, and the Sagdim was chalak and not chad. And that was one of the big enough communities between the Shechitim and the Sagdim and the Shechitim and the Hasidim. Today, Baruch Hashem, we have carbon steel, and we can have a knife that's both chad and chalak. The steel today is very, very good, and they can make very good knives, but it's not an easy thing to make a knife. And if you don't make a knife, kamosh tzarich, you'll have a pekima. And it takes time, and it takes practice, and it takes effort, and it takes patience to make a knife. Now, in the not Mahadran Shechitis, they are much, much more makele knives than in the Mahadran Shechitis. In the Mahadran Shechitis, a knife has to be really, really chad, v'chalak, kemoshe tzarich. Without any pigimis bechlal, even if you have the littlest, smallest problem, it's not going to go. The Shochtim don't like it very much. A Shechita, this is a while ago, but Mahadran Shechita, a Shochet used to take twice as much money for a bird as a non-Mahadran Shechita for many different reasons. First of all, he was able to work less time, less hours. They would drive him crazy with the knives, and it cost twice as much per bird for a Shochet of Mahadran Shechitas. I don't know what it's like right this second, but it's probably more or less the same thing right now.
Who makes the knives?
The Shochtim themselves make the knives. Now, it's important for Shochtim to make his knife because he has to be used to a knife. He has to know, you know, you get used to a certain knife, a certain feel of the knife. And all this, as a general rule, the Shochtim make the knives. Sometimes there are Shochtim who don't know how to make knives well, and they'll have somebody else make it for them, but it's really not very...
No companies that make knives just for this purpose?
He doesn't mean make a knife.
I don't mean making a knife.
What do you mean?
Sharpening.
You take a knife that's made by a company, a knife-making company. And you sharpen the knife. When I mean making a knife, I mean sharpening the knife so it doesn't have to be used. Now, it's a very difficult process. You have to first take one kind of a stone, then another kind of a stone, and they have a glutch state. It's a very arduous process in the beginning. After you make it already, you just have to sort of, you know, usually just sharpen it up a little bit. But if you have a problem, something goes wrong with the knife, it can definitely be a problem. Somebody had a question?
How often do you have to fix your knife?
Now, first of all, when a shochet goes to Shechita, in the Mahadran Shechita, generally speaking, he goes for half an hour, he takes with him two knives. After 15 minutes, he changes it, and he uses the next knife. So if you assume that you're shechting, let's say, 12 birds a minute, 12 times 15 is 180, so you're shechting 180 birds with one knife.
Wow.
Now, you have to be careful when you shecht, because if you go into the mafrekes, you mess your knife, and you also make the shikas difference. See, besides the problems of agroma, all the problems of avilcha shechita, you also have to make sure you're not going to the mafrekes. If you go to mafrekes, you really mess yourself up. And mafrekes is the bone in the back of the gargaris. The gargle. Okay. If you get into there, you're getting into trouble because you're going to mess your knife up because you're going to make a pegim in the knife. And then, if you do that, so the halacha is that if you check a knife and it's not good, so all the birds that you shechted until that point, they're also treif. Now, if you have five shechtim on the line and you've checked the 180 times five and all of it treif, so you're getting into a lot of big trouble. Now, the rabbanut is noted to be making a little bit, you know, and they don't really make them treif. I mean, once we had a problem, a real problem. The shechtim are very, very careful in Eretz Yisrael. And in Chutz La'aretz, this happens pretty often. I remember, I don't want to tell the story, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's not that often that you have a problem with a knife. And if you have a problem with the knife in Eretz Yisrael, you have a very, very small problem. So the Mahadran Shechitis will not use it, and they'll send it to Not Mahadran. The Not Mahadran Shechitis will use it. And not only that, even if the knife is really, really treif, let me explain what this story is. You have to understand the halachic principles involved here. There is a halacha that a chaticha or diskabed. Does anybody know what that is?
No.
Okay. There's a. Let's say you have six shochtim on a line, okay? And you shecht for 10 minutes, and all of a sudden you find one of the knives is treif. Okay? So theoretically, all the different chickens that were shechted until that point, you have six times 12 times 10 is already how many chickens? 600 chickens. Theoretically, roll treif. Treif is really treif. Okay. However, now, but that's only. But you say, well, why is it treif? It's bottle berov. We have a klal that min bimino is bottle berov, right? And bottle berov, you certainly have many. Even though this one shochet, let's say, is he shechted his chickens and they're all treif. But the other chickens, you have 5, 6 of the chickens are kosher. So it's bottle berov. We have a klal that hatikha liskabi means if I have a portion of meat that I will give to an oreach, I'll give to somebody on his portion, if you ever have a schnitzel and I want to give it to people, that's something that's double kosher, it's not bottle. It's not bottle ever. Okay, even if a million portions of chicken, it's not bottle. However, So the question is, what is a chicken? Is a chicken a chatir or liskabed? This is a machlokus in the mechaber and the Ramah. The mechaber says that a chatir or liskabed is anything that is not, according to the mechaber, anything that's not really ready to put on a table, it's already cooked and it's already finished and already processed, and it's already ready to put on the table, that's not a chatir or liskabed. So therefore, a chicken which is shechted, but it's not cooked, it's not kashered, it's not, you have a whole bunch of processes, the mechaber holds it's not a chatir or liskabed, and therefore, the chicken is, all the chickens are kosher, basically. The Ramah holds that as long as you don't have a very, very big process, for example, defeathering the chickens is something that renders that makes a chicken a not a chaticha or a liskabed. So the chickens that haven't been defeathered yet, those are still kosher, but the other ones are not. The Ba'at will take them anyway. But I remember we once had a problem in Mashrita that we found a real, real psalm. It's not very, very often you have that. A real, real tray for the chicken. A real pagam and a knife, and the shochet was shechting for a while with it, and they went to Rav Ozner, and they went to this, Becholofen, Basof, they wrote in the packages, it's kosher according to the Mechaber, and this and the Simin, and you know, everybody thought, wow, this is going to be a real big chumra of the Mechaber, but really he was saying that the only is Sfaradim Shirin, because Rechidil is Kabbat, according to the Mechaber, and therefore it's okay. I remember in America they used to write about egg matzis, that it's kosher according to Ramah, and this and the Simin, and everybody thought it was a big chumra to eat egg matzis, but it was really a very big kula, and people don't know, you know, it's according to Mechaber, well, Mechaber says it's kosher, how do you get more kosher than that? It's certainly the best thing in the world. But really, it can be a problem. It doesn't happen very often, but it can happen.
So they don't check after every shechita? After every bird, they don't check?
No, then boy, the knife, no.
Then it would take longer.
Okay, now, it would take much longer, and it's not done. You know, in the olden days, they used to do it. But if you find any real problem in a sakin, the Mahadran shechitas will take it out. The not mahadran shechitas are obviously much, much more lenient at the beginning and at the end. In both times, they're much more lenient with sakinim, and unless it's really a problem, they're not going to help the chalal. Yes?
I was in one place. I thought that the chickens are coated. You can tell which ones he shechted.
Not at the end. They are, but not at the very beginning. As a general rule, first of all, it really can't be, because the cones are going around and around, and at that point, it really isn't possible. They're coated afterwards for the mashgichim to make sure that each mashgich has it knows which reyes he's checking. But for the shechita, it's really very difficult to code them, and they generally speaking do not code them, especially since this problem is very unusual. So they're not going to code. They don't code the chickens at the beginning. They code the chickens at the end. Not the end, but in the middle. I'll get to that also eventually. Okay, but Cholofen. So, yes?
According to the Ramah, until the feathers are taken off,
Then it's bottle. Then it's bottle berov, and then it's kosher. Yeah.
Because it's not mechaber.
Don't they? Empire chickens. I remember.
What I was told in America was. What I was told in America was that in America it takes 5 minutes from the time the chicken is shechted right. Until after feathers are off. They check the sack in every 5 minutes, and therefore anything that is that they find the pgam, they will take it. They won't have to take it off. Now they told me, by the way, in America, which I don't understand. That even if though that is the case, they put it with the treif. Remember, the difference in price between kosher chicken and net kosher chicken in America is much less than in Eretz Yisrael. They don't really care too much. You know, another 500,000 chickens, it's not that much of a difference in price. There are plenty of places to sell non-kosher chickens in America. Yes?
In the question of the
gima
and the knife, if
Mahadran
shochets don't fold by anything with the gima whatsoever, but Rav Nuh does, how is
Rav Nuh
considered kosher?
Loiganti.
I'm sorry. How is Rav Nuh considered kosher if they'll accept that Rav Nuh, if sorry, if not Mahadri, who accept that Begima, come by Rabbi Nut, is okay. How's that coming? Begima and I.
There's a big machlokus as to what a pegima and a knife has to be in order to be rendered not kosher. That's a machzedek. There are a lot of different days as to what it has to be, and you know, it has to be something that's oger. What does it have to be oger? A sa'ara? What kind of a sa'ara? From a beer? It should be here. Exactly what has to be oger? Exactly how big the pegima has to be in order to be treif is a big machlokus. The rabbanut is much more makil. The rabbanut will say a knife is kosher as long as when you take a hair from your beard. And it doesn't stop the beard. It doesn't stop the care from going through. They'll be matir. A mahavdim shchita. As long as you can really feel it well, they're not gonna, even with your fingernail, they're not gonna let it through. So this machlokis, what it is. Those people, those poskim who nekel, it's a mekel, and the rabbanut is mekel with these things. So they say it's okay. It's not a problem. But the mahavdim shchitas won't let it go through. That's all. Okay. I think I answered your question. Okay. Now. All right. So I think I see I'm taking too much time here, but I'm until when? 10:30. We said
10:15.
10:14 and a half.
Okay, 10:14 and a half. Okay. I hope I get through. Now another thing that. Yeah. Okay. I hope I'll finish. I'll finish. I'm gonna be finished anyway. You know, if I don't finish. So. Now. Okay. Now. Yeah. Another thing you have to worry about is. What you shecht? This is my personal problem always. L'chatchim, you're supposed to shecht the kohen and the veshet, the food pipe and the windpipe. There are two simonim you're supposed to shecht in a chicken. L'chatchila, but the evidence kosher with one simon. Animals are supposed to be shechted. You have to shecht two simonim. Birds are supposed to be shecht one simon. Rubel kakulo, if most of it is shechted, it's also okay. Now there are some shochtim who are sloppy, and they don't shecht the entire veshet. They'll shecht the whole kohen, but they won't shecht the whole veshet. I was very, very upset when I saw shechtim doing that. There are two pipes. There's the food pipe and the wind pipe, right? The wind pipe is more. It's more a schus. It's like a cartilage.
Does it look like the other one?
No.
It's
one,
the white one.
Yeah, the white one is the wind pipe. The more pliable one is the food pipe. Okay, now you're supposed to shecht the entire lechatchila. Both of them are supposed to be shechted completely. Even in the Mahadran Shechitas, I mean, I was very mad. But I used to check the Shechita. I used to go 10 times a day to shecht the Shechita. If I would find that there was someone who was not shechting right, I would throw him out immediately. But most even Mahadran Shechitas don't do that. It's really, I think it's not right, but... they're getting better. When I go, they know me already. And when I go and I check the shechita, they make sure to do it right. But I'm not always there. Anyway, b'chol ofen, so you're really supposed to check the kohen leveshet. It's kosher b'dievid, not that way. I just think that you're supposed to check lechatchila. You know, why should check b'dievid? I think if the shechita is b'dievid, the whole shechita is b'dievid. So what are you gaining? But okay, but yes.
I understand why if you're running a shlachtos, you should care about that. But as a consumer. This, as far as I know, there's no inyan. If I have two chickens before me, one that was the kana and the veshet were shechted, and one just the kana, there's no inyan to eat the one.
Well, I'll tell you. Theoretically, you're right. After it's done, they're both kosher and they're both fine. Except that if you have a shoychit who is continuously shechting only the kana, not the veshet bechlau, I think there's a problem in the shechit. You know, he has with this mechavin lechatchila to do it the way that it's supposed to be correct. And you know everything is kosher b'dievet. If you shecht only, if you salt only half the bird, it's also kosher b'dievet. I think that shechita should be done kamosh tzarich. And if you're going to do things in a sloppy way, that's kosher b'dievet. I don't think you should be doing it that way. That's what I told. As I said in the beginning, shechita is supposed to be done properly. To do a shechita b'dievet. Now, if it happens once, lo amati shem davar. I'm not going to say it's treif. I wouldn't take it out of the mahadim, by the way, either. You know, if I find a chicken that it wasn't shechted 100%, and you know the kohen is shechted completely and the veshet is shechted. I wouldn't take it out of Mahadran because it's Mahadran shitting, but the evidence kosher. But if you have a shaykhid doing it constantly, it's a problem with the shechita. And then I would not let him continue with the shechita. There are definitely rabbonim hamachshirim who don't agree with me and who didn't agree with me, and I argue with them very vehemently. Some of them agreed afterwards, some of them didn't. Okay, then I darkish shall tell you. Say that. All right. Let's continue. You also have to make sure, of course, that the shechita is under the right place. In America, they shecht very much in an angle. for different reasons, and you have to be very, very careful. I mean, there are some shechitas in America, this I knew a long time ago, that check every shechita to make sure that it's done kamosh, that it doesn't go out of the place of shechita. It goes out of the place of shechita even at the end, right? It's an avela. And so you have to make sure it's done correctly. As a general rule, the shochtim actually do shech correctly, and usually it's not a problem even the regular rabbanut shechita. But once again, if you're doing it very, very quickly, it's always less of a. It's always done with less of a hakpada on all the shechita. Okay, now let's talk about the processing of the chickens. Now, okay, so the first thing that happens is the defeathering. Defeathering is supposed to be done with cold water. In non-kosher chickens, they defeather, they put all the chickens in boiling water, very hot water, not boiling water, very hot water, and the feathers just go off without anything. The pores open up, and all the feathers go off. In kosher chickens, that this is all chickens, you have to, you take something and sort of hit the chickens with sort of a rubber, and that causes the feathers to come off. The hotter the water is, the more easily it comes off. As a general rule, the water is cold. I used to go in, and when I first came, I just didn't say this story, but when I first came to the Mashrita, I told I came in as a Litvak, and everybody else is Hasidisha and Sardisha. I came in there, I was Munchat Milamala, Rav Kook put me in there as a Rav Mashrita. I didn't go through the ranks, I wasn't a Mashgiach and a Sheikh, and I came in, everybody was, they wanted to kill me, they weren't very happy about me coming. And, you know, and they said, well, he doesn't know anything. And the truth is, I really probably didn't know anything at that time. But I came into the Mashrita, and, you know, I was walking around. And it was a Mashrita, all the big Rabbanim were there. Like, it was going to Chutz Loretz, and all the big, big Rabbanim were there. And I was a little Chinook at that time, and I didn't really know too much. And I went into the place where they were taking off the feathers. It was very, very hot. I said, what is so hot for? I took my hand into the place taking the feathers, and the water was hot. It was boiling. And I ran out, and I said, look, they're heating the water. He said, nah, you're crazy. They're heating the water. They've been for years this way. And I said, come in and look at it. So he looked at it. He said, nah, that's not really hot. And it's just the water is getting heated up by the turkeys. It's not really hot. They said, there's a heating element here. I'll bet dollars to donuts. Ancient saying, I said, look, you look into the thing, I'm telling you there's a heating element here. And Basof, they looked into it and they found that the water was being, machinery was being cooled off by the water of the Mashrita. And the whole, they were doing it for years. And they were really very, very upset about it. After that, nobody said anything to me. I was for Hashem. I was Siyat Nishmaya Shein Kedug Masa, because I really didn't know too much, but I found it out. But it's generally speaking, it's not done that way. But a good Rav Mashrita puts his hand in once in a while to make sure that the water is cold.
I thought you said if it's hot water, it comes out easier.
It does.
And it does less damage.
Yeah.
So what's the problem? You want hot water.
No, the problem is that if it's treif. It's very good.
Why is it treif? What is the damage?
No, because it's not kashered yet. And there's blood inside the chicken, and then it's maplia the blood into the whole thing, and it traps the whole chicken. Okay, so you have to make sure that the defeathering is done in cold water. Now, inside the place where they do the defeathering, they do a bedikah on something called Tzomes Hagidin. Tzomes Hagidin is a certain place where you have many, many different sinews coming together. There are 16 different sinews in a chicken's leg. They all come together in a place. They all come together in different places. The sinews, you know, they move the claws around, they move different things around, and they all come together in a certain place. Now, the place they're supposed to come together to make a treif is on the pulka. Okay? In the yellow part of the chicken, it's not really treif, even if there's something wrong with it. But theoretically, when you check a leg of a chicken, really, theoretically, it makes most sense to check on the pulka. Now, how do you check it? There are two ways of checking. One way of checking is opening up the pulka, looking in and seeing if there's a problem. That's probably the best way to do it. Then you pull it, you see if there's any problem there. Now, of course, if you do that, you mess up the pulka. There's another way. There are two ways of doing it. One way is you open up on the yellow part of the chicken, and even though that's not really the place, it makes a treif, but afalpikein, the sinews like rubber bands.
What's the yellow part of the chicken?
On the bottom, you know, chickens, when you get a chicken in your house, you don't have any yellow part, right? When you go to the chicken actually has claws, and it's a yellow part at the bottom of the chicken.
Fiso.
Under the pulka, there's a yellow, under the pulka,
yeah.
The chicken walks on legs, and those are yellow. Right?
The
yellow. The legs are yellow.
From what?
the thigh.
That's how
they
grow.
Part of the chicken.
A chicken. You never saw a chicken.
I went there to swallow, and I saw that there's a slash.
Okay, I'll explain. I'll explain what the point is. Okay. Okay. Now. Okay. Now. Okay. Now. So there's a the chicken's legs have there are three bones. There are three just like a person's legs. There are three bones. There's a leg. There's the foot. Okay. There's the shin, and there is the shoulder. Okay. Those are the three different parts of a person's legs. Chickens also have the same thing. They have the yellow part. Okay. You know what the
yellow part
is?
On the foot.
On the foot, the
above
foot.
The foot. Yeah,
well,
yeah, yeah.
Below the foot. I mean, yeah. Then there's the pulka. Yep. And there's something called the kulis, the yarech. Okay, that's the shulash in Eretz Yisrael. It's called. In America, it's called the thigh, I think. Becholofen. So you have those three different bones. Now the place that Tzomas HaGidin is treif is in the pulka, in the second bone, and theoretically you should really check that part. But it messes up the polka, of course, and a lot of people don't like to mess up the polka. The truth is that if you check underneath from the bottom, it really is okay, because if there's a problem with the Tzomas HaGidin, it's like a rubber band, and if it's a problem with the top, it's going to jump down to the bottom, and you're going to see it on the bottom. You see that there's something wrong at the bottom. So if you open up the yellow part and you pull it, and everything is okay, then really it's okay. The reason why they do it on the pulka is really because it looks better. But it doesn't look better, but it looks more kosher. So people say, my stuff, and it's very good. That's really why they do it. I mean, I was there when the whole thing developed, and there are many shechitas that don't do it. If they do it kamosh tzarich, it's really beseder. I'm not saying it's that good.
What do you look for when you open the pulka?
You make sure, first of all, there's no rayasis, that there's no swelling, that there's no that there's nothing unattached. If there's swelling, really, you can really see under the skin. It's also possible. There's no posterior. There are no problems. If the reyesa, we don't check it. In the not mahadrin shchitis, they don't open anything usually. They just look on the outside. If it's really swollen and big and gigantic, they'll catch it. But if there's a small problem, they usually don't catch it. So very often, if you look at the treifis in the kosher and in the chalak, There are usually very big differences. In a halak, you'll have, let's say, 3 or 4% treif, and in the kosher, you have, like, 0.2% treif. Now, the difference is not whether it's treif or not. The difference is they don't check. If you don't check, you don't find, obviously. That's, by the way, that's one of the reasons why halak costs much more. Because when you have a mashchita, he figures that when he has, he's not going to sell treif, but you're going to catch much more treif when you're doing halak. So the halak has to pay for that also. And he's not going to let you check your chickens and make stuff treif on my cheshbin. You want to do it on your cheshbin. So the chalak has to pay for all these different things, all these different added expenses. The chalak always has to make sure, or the mashchita always has to make sure that it's paid for by the chalak.
So
yes.
A mashchita doesn't send to three places like Mahadrin, Rabbanut, and treif. They only sell either Rabbanut and treif or Mahadrin and treif. Is that correct?
No. No, definitely not. Definitely not. They have three. No, but if the Mahadrin finds it's treif, they're not going to sell it as Rabbanut. Then it goes into treif. But they're not going to find it if it's treif. If it's not a Mahadrin shechit, they're not going to find it b'chlal. You have, every Rabbanut has Mahadrin, Rabbanut and treif. Yeah, if you go from Mahadrin to treif, there's a very big loss. The Badatz does it that way, by the way. They don't have any Rabbanut, any what's called, they don't have any middle stage. And that makes a problem, actually, especially in Bakar, more than chickens. But it's because, okay, I'm not talking about Bakar now, so that'll be the next week we'll talk about Bakar.
Are you checking the pulka after it's over, right?
No. You check the pulka still in the merita. It's still in the cheder merita. You open it up immediately, and you check and see if it's okay. Okay, now.
Something in a pulka could be wrong, and it can kill the animal within a year? An animal, isn't that the definition of treif?
Well, I wouldn't say there's a definition of treif. It's a machlokas of treif achaya, treif anachaya. The animal will, generally speaking, not live for a year. Remember, you're shechting these chickens at 6 weeks old. A chicken that can't walk very well is not going to live too long. Yes.
Isn't this whole thing with checking with someone to get in a new thing?
Yes and no. Remember that in the olden days, first of all, you have to understand that chickens today are shechted at 6 weeks old. Chickens once upon a time, they shechted them at a year old or a half a year old. A chicken that wouldn't make it to a half a year, so it died and it didn't last till a half a year. Once it got to a half a year, then it was pretty strong and pretty healthy, but not all chickens got to that point. Now, when you shecht rocks, for example, you shecht these older chickens, you don't have problems with terms of gidin. You usually don't check them bechlal. You don't check the lungs, you don't check something, because they're already older chickens, and they're already, if they got past the, you know, past the infancy, people used to die until 5 years old. You know, the amount of people who used to live after 5 years old was like, they used to have a 10 or 20% mortality rate for people until 5 years old. Now they have incubators and a lot of different things, and they keep people alive at that point. But 100 years ago, people didn't very often people didn't make it until 5 years old. Chickens are the same way. Chickens, if they're not shechted at 6 weeks old, very often they won't make it. Besides that, remember, they're putting these little chicken coops. They don't have a place to walk around. Their legs don't get developed well. They have. They're given all chemicals to make them grow quickly, it's not really very healthy for the chickens. It's probably not healthy for humans either, but that's a different story. But they're not grown the way they used to be. It's not very natural. The whole chicken industry is not all natural now. Yes.
I was told that what we have now are chickens that have the meat of a grown up chicken on the skeleton of a 6 week old chicken. Therefore, it's more of a.
That's right. It's heavier.
They breed.
It's very much heavier. The chickens are younger. They develop much, much more quickly. They have all of these enzymes. What's it called? Not enzymes.
Hormones.
They give them all these things. The next thing you check is the lungs. The lungs on non-Mahadra chickens are not checked. Bechlal, in America, by the way, they check Tomasegin. They do not check lungs. Because they tied it that there's no Newcastle in America. These are never sold. Like, this is in America. I didn't check it. I don't know. I can't say it's true or not true. People say it's true. It could be. But there are definitely many, many different trephis and lungs that you have to worry about. Not everybody holds that all the trephis they take out are actually treph. When I first came to the Mashrita and I saw what they were taking off, I said, that's not Mahadrin. So he said, no, it's treif. What are treif about? Because I learned, and if you look in the all these things don't look treif, but the chicken lungs are very, very small. And there's different things, and they say there's calculus and phonos and tinra and babuos, they don't have in chickens. There are a lot of different treifs that you have in chickens that any reyes in a chicken lung, not any reyes, but very often they'll treif a chicken lung. It's not necessarily always 100% treif, but you can have, it depends on the mashrita. Now, what I would be shechting in my mashrita, if we'd have more than 10% treif, I went home. I didn't stay. And what happened is that those chickens would then become not mahadrin. They wouldn't check anything and go stay there, and shumbaya. And everything would be kosher. That happens in chicken lungs, by the way. If you have a meshek that you make a hadgama, and there are different types of, there are different levels of mahadrin chick, of non-mahadrin chickens also. There are some places that will do a hadgama. There is a look, and they'll see what, if they have more than X amount of percentage of treif, they'll put a mashgiach on and check. There are others who won't put anything on. They never find out what it is, and everything is kosher. And I call the seder. The ones that make hadgama, they have a blessing that they have 2% treif. They'll stop shech. They'll stop bedikis, and you'll have 2% treif. It's bottle b'shir, I don't know, bottle b'ro, bottle b'shishim, bottle whatever, 2% bottle b'shishim. But b'chol ofen, it's one of more umbrellas bottle, I guess, and it'll go. But the Mahadran chickens, they actually check every single one, every single reya. How they do it, they do it correctly, properly. I always tie it in something really a bedikah. It's, because that's why if it was more than 10%, once a meet a motzui, I went home and I didn't check it bechlal, because I didn't feel it was really a bedikah. Now, besides that, there are many different parts of the chickens that are that can have problems. For example, you have to make sure that all the inner organs are taken out of the chicken in order to kasher it. If you don't have the inner organs taken out, they can cause a problem. If the heart is left in, if the liver is left in, if the lung, well, there's lungs and kidneys, we'll talk about that in a minute. But if the heart or the liver is left in, it can definitely be a problem because the heart has blood inside of it. And if you kasher the chicken together with the heart, you can assume that there's a lot of blood that comes out, and there's blood dam be'en and cannot pass the whole chicken. The same is true with the liver. If you're not very careful that all the inner organs of the chicken are not taken out, then you can certainly have a problem with the malicha. especially if you have people, if especially if the chicken is closed and nobody really sees what's inside of it, and you're doing 20 chickens a minute, you're salting 20 chickens a minute, and nobody's really looking, you can definitely have many, many internal organs inside of the chicken, which nobody finds out until after it's already salted, and then, nobody's really looking there either. So you just take it out like a marmu, and nobody knows about it, and I can't say that.
What do they do when it's automated?
What does it mean, automated?
In other words...
Everything is automated. But automated doesn't mean that they're always 100%. And they take out things, but to say everything is 100%, it's not. Use a computer. Is it always right? You always, never have any problems with computers. I have problems with computers. I always have problems with computers. But some of the automation is not always the answer, and it doesn't... it's better than it used to be. But it's not 100%, and automation doesn't take everything out, and you have to look and see. There are always little pieces of liver and little pieces of different parts are always there. Now, there's something called the kidneys. It's called kleyot in Hebrew, and the kidneys are, in not ma'adin shechita, generally speaking, not taken out b'chalal. Now, why not? Because it's attached to the thigh, and there are many poskim who say it's not necessary to take them out. In America, once upon a time, it was never taken out. I asked somebody, he said today it's taken out always. It's very difficult to take it out after a special vacuum and take it out with this vacuum. There's a prima godum who says that the kidney is a different piece of meat. And if you have two pieces of meat that are sort of attached to each other or on each other, and you don't put salt in the middle, that's called melicha mitzarechot, which is not good. And the prima godum says it's a problem. There are many poskim who disagree with the prima godum, and the not ma'adin shechitis don't take out the kidneys. Even the Mahadran Shechitis, you have to really, really work on it well, and it depends which Shechit it is. If they do it well, then they'll take it out. It doesn't always come out 100%, but if you try, you'll at least get most of it out. And the lungs, of course, if you don't, not worried about checking the lungs, very often you can have lungs in the chicken also. And that also is the same problem as the Prima Godim, as Shechit and Aserechot. But in the Mahadran chickens, if they check the lungs, obviously there's going to be, there's not going to be a problem with having lungs in the chicken. There's also a problem of Tzivir Saddam. Tzivir Saddam means that if you have different wounds in a chicken and there is a coagulation of blood under the skin, that is a problem in Malicha. It doesn't take it out. You're supposed to cut it and take out the blood in that way. In the Mahadrin Shritis, they look at every chicken back and forth and inside and outside to make sure there's not anywhere. If there is, they'll cut it open. And then Mahadrin Shritis, they won't do it before the Malicha. They'll do it probably before they put it into the package after the melicha, because they want it to look good. But they won't necessarily do it before the melicha. And it can definitely do a problem of melicha when you do that way. If there are problems with dam inside the chicken, a varim inside the chicken. Now, another thing is that in Mahadran chickens in Eretz Yisrael, they're all open in the back. That means you open the chicken completely in the back. It's open. You can see everything there. You see if there's any problem inside. Not everybody holds it's a good idea.
The spine side
is open in Eretz Yisrael. In America, it's not opened as a general rule. There are some times when it is.
The breastbone is open so that the spine holds the rest of the bird.
Yeah, but the spine is not open. The breastbone is open a little bit. It depends where. But as a general in Eretz Yisrael, there's a little hole in the top, and that's it. That's how they do usually in Eretz Yisrael. In America,
open by the spine.
In Eretz Yisrael,
yeah.
They open. There's Mahadran Shechitis all open the spine.
In America, the regular
Shechitis in Eretz Yisrael, there's a little hole in the top. In America also, it's a little hole in the top. They claim in America you do a very good job and you look and see everything. I'm not so sure. Maybe they do. But b'chol ofen, there are poskim. I remember Neuwert was very much against opening the spine. He tainted, and I'm not saying he's wrong, by the way. He's certainly a very fine basic. He said when you open the spine, you are opening the skin, and when you open the skin, you have to malicha inside the skin, and it's very difficult to do that. So he timed that you shouldn't do it, but he did, Basofi did it also, because he realized that if you wouldn't open the spine, you wouldn't be able to sell any chickens. There was one age that he wanted to give that you should do it after the malicha. That he refused to do. He said, I'm not going to fake anybody out. Either you do it before, or you don't do it at all. So he refused to do that. I really respect him a lot for that, actually. But in America, usually they don't do it. And they tied it like a Neuwert, that it's better not to open it up. I think it's better to open it up, because I know that if it's not opened up, you have a lot of junk inside that you don't get out. And I think it's better to open it up. I'm not saying it's clear that it's not good because actually there are maidas not to open it up. But so all the hadashikas open it up. The Chochmas Adam, by the way, says you have to open it up. You can't have a little hole in the top because you can't have a mosterich. If you don't open it up completely, then it's much more difficult to get the salt all inside and have everything completely and totally salted. Remember that salt is really supposed to be on every single millimeter of the chicken, which is very difficult if it's not there. You know, in the olden days, you know, your mothers used to take it and make sure every little piece of look here.
Like rain.
That's right, that it go down like rain, and you make sure every little piece. Today, the way things are salted is you have something called the Shulchan Melicha. And you put on the Shulchan Melicha, and if you have, you know, old Russian lady doing it 20 birds a minute, so you take it up, you know, 20 birds a minute, 3 seconds of chicken, which is very, very fast. And you know, you have a Shulchan Melicha, you know, you're doing one, and it goes very, very quickly. If you look inside, and you look into different cracks, there are different places where it's difficult to get under the wings and in here. There are different places where it's very difficult to get salt in unless it's done kamor sarich. In the Mahadran Shechitas, you have a couple of people with a mashgiach, or you have mashgiachim themselves that do it, and it's done much, much better. That's the way the melichah is done. Now let me just talk about the shriya. Before you do
What does the hole on the top do? If it's not a...
You have to get everything out. If you don't have a hole in the top, then all the kishkis and everything is inside. You have to have a hole on the top. You don't want to. Nobody wants that.
You can do well, that's the bottom
also. Yeah, no. The bottom is where the neck is. It is.
Oh, I see.
No. Okay. I guess I'm talking the bottom maybe.
No.
when you're rushing time, the chicken is standing upside down. So. Now, you have something called the shriya. The shriya you're supposed to have before you kasher a chicken, you have to do something called shriya. You're supposed to soak a chicken for half an hour. Now, besides, before you get to that, actually, there's something you're supposed to actually take a chicken and rub it and what's it called and make sure there's nothing inside of it. In the Mahadran Shechitas, they have actually a high pressure water that they put inside. They make sure that everything comes out. And the Mahadran chickens, they don't do anything. Basically, they take it out. They have a little bit of water going inside. It's not really done. I'm not saying it's trade, but it's not done really kamosh tzarich. Now, when you get to the shriya, the temperature of the water is also a question. Zirkiv Eger says it has to be less than, it can't be very, very cold. In the Mahadran Shechitas, usually they like to get it more than 8 degrees centigrade. More than 8 degrees centigrade. In America, they told me to get it to 10 degrees centigrade. Now, the reason why, in the regular Shechitot, they don't do that. The reason why they don't do that, this is the reason why people may want to buy not Mahadran Shechitas, is because something called salmonella, and if you one bird has salmonella and you have a high, and it's not, the water is not very cold, it will infect all the other birds, and they really would not like to have all the birds getting salmonella. They claim this, they have the shriya is done in this gigantic bathtub, you know, about 5 cubic meters big, and all the birds go inside of it. And so if the water is very cold, so the salmonella really won't infect anybody. But if it's not that cold, so they won't. Now, the veterinarians all want to get it to like 2 degrees centigrade, which is very, very cold. And there are poskim who say that if it's that cold, then the blood sort of coagulates inside, it won't come out. And therefore, they say it's not good. And I told them to make sure it was always at least 8 degrees. They told me it 10 degrees, which I think is very, very hot. But it could be never saw the machmir more than it is now. Also, another thing is that the shriya is supposed to be clean, more or less. It always have a very, very clean. But the question is how dirty. If you look at this big, gigantic bathtub, so you'll see it looks reddish in the Mahadran Shechitas. In the not Mahadran Shechitas, it looks terrible. It looks like this, you know, it looks like blood, really. And, you know, you can't, you're really talking about thousands. Yeah, in a shechita, you'll have 60,000 chickens being shechted a day. Now, if you don't change the water very often, you'll have a lot of blood in the water. And you know, when you're being shown in blood, it's really not a good shriya. I'm not saying it's treif once again. The Mahadran Shechitas make sure that the water is going in very, very fast. It's being changed very quickly. The amount of chickens that are going in are much less. Also, the Mahadran Shechitas, they're much more makpid. They should be really a half an hour. The Mahadran Shechitas, the average of a half an hour. You have maybe 28 minutes, 29 minutes. Not atkedigach makpid. The salting also, we talked about salting. The salting is supposed to be done for an hour. Now you have something called the Shulchan Melicha, where you put a chicken on a table and it goes la'at, la'at, up, and eventually it goes into the Hadocha. In the Mahadran Shechitas, they make sure it's an hour. In the Mahadran Shechitas, they're being thrown around, that it is an hour, it's not an hour. It's not treif b'di'evit. I'm not saying it's treif b'di'evit. Once again, in the Mahadran Shechitas, they make sure that the salt is being done in every little place. They don't miss anything. And in the Mahadran Shechitas, it's done. I'm not saying it's treif, by the way, but it's not done what I would say, k'moshe tzarich. It's done, pachota yoter b'seder, but not really k'moshe tzarich. At the very, very end of the salting process, something called hadocha achrona, which means you take the chickens and you take the salt off the chickens. Now, this is something I found this is a long time, probably 30 years ago, maybe more than that, when I first started to have my when I was the first Ramachir, I made a cheshbin that, you have 60,000 chickens going into this hadocha. That means after the chickens are salted, you have to rinse off the salt. Now, what they used to do was, they used to have them falling into this big, gigantic tub, and they would come out. They have 60,000 chickens, and you have a tub, even if it's 10 cubic meters big, and 60,000 chickens, you can have like more than 10 tons of salt on it. So I made a cheshbin, you can probably have mostly salt in the thing at the end. Now, if you have mostly salt, there's a problem of shriya in seer that maybe mavliya, the dam inside. I felt it was a very big problem, and I said that they have to, before they put this stuff into the hadocha, they have to first have a high pressure water coming down on it to get all the salt off. I did this in the beginning, and the whole thing came out, blew up, and wanted to kill me. But myself, they actually did it. They actually got it straight, and they were able to manage. And today, I think it's really more or less a standard in most mashritot, even in not mahadrin, they have this hadocha. But even after the hadocha, you still have a lot of salt. And in the mahadrin shechitas, you have they have a lot more water inside. Between in the breaks, they take all the salt out and they make sure all the water is out and it's clean. And at the end, the water is not all that salty. And then I'm adding cheese once again, the much less back pit and everything else that goes through it, and that's all. Now, afterwards also, in the Mahadran Shechit, you'll have a mashgiach at the end, the pirukim, and there are differences in the way they do the simanim. You have a chosim, betochosim, and in the Mahadran Shechit, usually. This is something I didn't know about in Eretz Yisrael. When I started, and I said, they were sending stuff from Mahadrin, and they were sending stuff in a basket, and they put a plumba on the handle of the basket, and they were sending it that way. And I said, what happened to your chosim? He said, oh, that's the chosim. I said, it's not a chosim. Chosim means you have to cover it, and it has to be completely sealed on all sides. This is not only in Shechita, by the way. It's a lot of different things. And Eretz Yisrael, they did not know what chosim was worth, bichlal. When I started in the best place in the world, and I went to, I said, what is this? This is not a chosim. Eventually, it came through. And eventually now,
The Gemara spells it out.
But go to the Rabbanut and find out. Today it's much, much, much better. Tell you, 30 years ago, they had no clue. They sent this stuff, and I was screaming about it. And then they sent stuff to America, and America said, what happened to your chosomos? They said, hey. And they found out they really have to do it. So eventually they got it straight, and they do chosomos now. But they don't really do a chosom to chosom. They're not Mahadran Shechitas too much. Mahadran Shechitas are much more makpid, but okay.
What do they do?
They just close it up, and that's all. The bags are really a chosom. I'm not saying there's no chosomos, but they'll close it up in like this tray, and they'll... But to have a chosom, you're really supposed to have a chosom on it.
What about plumbers? They used to have plumbers.
Yeah, well, you don't have to have a plumber. Plumber is very good, but there are other ways of making a chosom. You have these holograms, and mm-hmm. but if you stick it on, but you have to put it on in a way that if it takes it off, then it's broken. You can't have, if it doesn't break when it's taken off, that's not a chosom b'chlal. So it has to be done in a way that it's really a chosom, really seals the thing. If it's not, then it's not a chosom. Hopefully the Mahadran Shechitas do it right. I think today they've done much better than they used to be. Okay, yes?
The difference between European, Central European, Polish, Shechita, and Spanish. Are they different or not?
They're not really done differently today. There are different halachas, but today all the Mahadran Shechitas, more or less, what I call Mahadran Shechitas, More or less the same standard. Pachota yuter, it's more or less, especially in chickens. In chickens, it's much less of a difference. And once again, I don't want to get into any hashkochas. I don't want to talk about hashkochas here. I don't think it's proper for me to say about hashkochas. But the Sfaradim and the Ashkenazim, really, the hashkochas are more or less the same. The Sfaradim, certainly in meat, are much more machmir, by the way. In lungs of meat, they're much more machmir, theoretically. But in chickens, it's not really
different. And when you see a kehillah and safar, one next to the other, and then
I didn't say that. I didn't say it, and I'm not going to say it. Okay, early questions. Yes.
At what point are goyim involved in the?
The goyim in Eretz Yisrael, they are, first of all, they are the magishim of the chickens to the shayichet. That's number one. Very often they have goyim on the line who are putting the birds on the line, but the goyim are not really doing any of the. Of the actual processing of the chicken in kosher. You're always supposed to have mashgichim doing all those different things. But there are definitely many, many goyim in the line and doing many different things.
And the sul table?
On the sul table, very often you'll have goyim, but in the mahadrin hashgochus, you'll have a mashgiach. Also, making sure they do a kumash tzarich. There are a lot of people who say it's better, because you have a mashgiach, you know, mashgiach also is a ben adam. I mean, he has to do 60,000, you know, not 60,000, but even, you know, 2,000-3,000 chickens, he also cuts corners. When he's looking at the Arab's going to do it right, because he's going to say, do it again.
Oh,
let
the
himself do it again. Let the Arab do it again.
Right.
Yes. You got a question? Yes? Yes, Bagasha.
Well, sometimes when you get a packaged chicken, you find all kinds of things, like the red area, or you find a broken
bone.
Yeah,
that's a good question. It really depends. You see, if it's a good hashgacha, it's almost certainly okay. What happens is like this: if you ever were to mashrita, you'll see they throw these chickens around. You know, really, and very often the bones are broken. And
that's after
happen.
The shrita, right?
It's after the shrita. If it's after the shrita in Shumbaya, the way you can tell is if it's black. If the blood is really black, if you have a lot of blood, it's really black. Then it's going to be treif, because that's a sign that happened before the shechita. Something called the buka da atma the shof miduchto, which means that the shin, the shok, is out of its place. Now that very often happens in a chicken. If it's white, it's certainly okay. If it's red or pink, it's also okay. If it's black, it's not. Now it's difficult to know. But the first time I came to mashrita, I'll tell you, and I looked at it and I said, wow, this is terrible. And I think I trafed about 150 chickens. And then the second day I came, they didn't say anything, they were very good, they're very nice. The second day I came, I started to look into it and I said, this is really not too much. And I realized that I was being much, much too machmir. The second day I trafed about 30 chickens. The third day it was about 3 chickens. You know, you learn these things as you go along. Hopefully it shouldn't cost the mashrita too much money. But as you go along, you get more and more used to what's happening, and you can tell the difference in what happens before shechita and after shechita. You have to know what the blood looks like before shechita and after shechita, and if you know what's happening, then you get paskin on it. It takes a little practice, but eventually you find out and you figure it out, and you can know what happens before shechita and after shechita. As a general rule, if it's really treif, they'll catch it 100 times because it's very, very noticeable. Now, if you have a little bit of pink inside, what I would suggest is just take out that pink and it's okay. If it's dark red, it depends where it is. If it's on the place that it's almost hagidin and it's really very, very dark red, I would take it to a rav to have it to paskin. But take it to a rav who knows a little about shechita, because most rabbanim do not know anything about shechita. And I'll tell you if it's good or not. As a general rule, it's usually okay. But if it's really very dark red, it can be a problem. If it's a rabbanut shechita, I would be much more hesitant about saying you don't have to take it, because they don't look very well. The Mahadran Shechitas really, really, really should catch it. I'm not saying, you know, people are people and things can be missed, so to say it's always good, I would not say that. If you have a problem with the shin, a bukada atma, inside the shok, unless it's really very, very dark red, it'll be okay. If you have a big red spot inside, very often inside the balik, inside the white meat, you'll have a big part of coagulated blood. That you should take out. It's kosher. The chicken is kosher, but you should cut away the red part, because that's coagulated blood that didn't come out, and that you should definitely take off. So if you see a big part of red spot wherever it is in the chicken, that you should cut away. But in the general rule, the chicken's gonna be kosher.
What if it's in the joint?
Once again, the joint, it depends what joint. In the book of the Yavam, it could be treif, but as a general rule, we should find it. What happens very often in Malicha is a Malicha will draw the blood out, and very often a part that was completely white before the Malicha will turn pinkish or reddish after the Malicha. Now, if it's really very dark red or black, then it can be a problem, but it's very rare to happen. And remember that there are, in the Hadron Shechitz especially, there are a lot of people looking at it, and it should have been caught. It really should have been caught. Once again, I'm not saying it always is caught, but as a general rule, it has been caught. And the odds that it's a problem are very, very small. Yes?
Is this also broken bones, the same idea?
A broken bone is the same thing. Bones break usually after Shechita. If a bone breaks before Shechita, it really should have been caught. Now, if you have a broken bone, and it's very, very red around it, then take it and ask a Shaila. If it's white, then it's okay. If it's, in other words, there's no, you don't see a lot of blood around it, it's certainly okay. It certainly happened after Shechita. If it's pinkish, it's also okay. If it's dark red, then ask.
And then when you said that it's worth cutting out when you find some red spot or whatever, so you can find that if you go looking. Do you have to go looking?
No. No, you'd have to go looking, and you can assume it's okay.
But, you know, taking part of the found that, you know, whatever, there's always a vein there that has something in it.
Yeah, in a vein, well, there were different veins that are taken in actually. I didn't talk about that. I didn't talk about that in the Shechita Bechlal. There were different veins that are taken out in the Mahatma Shechita also. But the veins after the Shechita, we assume it's probably tzir. If you see a lot of blood there, you should take it out. But really, it may care it then doesn't answer. Yes?
With someone's a given, what percentage of birds are found to have a problem?
It very much depends on the laka. Sometimes you'll have half a percent. Sometimes you'll have 5%. It depends on the bird. It depends how they were grown. It depends how healthy they are. It depends on a lot of things. Sometimes they catch some sort of a machla, and you'll have a lot of problems with it. It very much depends on what happens. But it's enough that necessitates checking, even by the Rabbanut to a certain extent. The Rabbanut also checks, but only from the outside. And the only catch, since it's going so quickly, they only catch it when it's really very, very big. By the way, when you're talking about the colors on the kluvim, that's on the reyes, on the they don't want to have too much for each mashgiach. So they have three mashgiachim. Each mashgiach has to know this is chicken. So they have different colors of the stands. So each mashgiach knows where his chicken is. But that's only inside the bedika. Inside in the Tzomet Segidin.
There were the six shochetim and there were six colors. And you knew that
in America, in Eretz Yisrael?
In the cones that he threw it in.
Because so, even the cone you throw it in, they don't stay there. You take it after that and you put it onto the next cone, onto a clove. No, you don't catch it then.
What's
you catch it afterwards.
Clove is a cage.
A clove is a cone. After it's in the cone and the dam comes out, you take it and you put it on a hanger. Okay. So even if the cones are okay, but usually you don't have that either, because usually, you know, the cones are going. You don't want to have any empty cones. So you put it on a kluv after that. So even if the cone, you know what the cones were in the kluv, you don't have that. And the cones, it takes maybe less than a minute to put in the cones. So it wouldn't make too much sense. I never saw it that way. Maybe there are places to do it. I don't know. I haven't seen it. But even if they are in the cones, the kluvim, after shchit, I don't think they are. They'll just take it out and put it on. The Arabs aren't going to look at every one of them. That's already, I think, too difficult. Yes. Any other questions? Yes.
Earlier, I heard you were speaking about that certain things were done in America a certain way, in Israel they're done a certain way. So if somebody's a shochet in America, he moves here, does he have to change his methodology to conform?
Yeah,
I would think so.
Definitely.
And relearn the whole thing?
No, you don't have to relearn the whole thing. You just have to do it differently. It's not all that different. It's not all that different. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Does this
shochet mean the knife?
It depends which Hasidus Shechita. Hasidus Shechita means there are different things to many different people. The Sa'at Shechita, for example, the main Akpada is that women shouldn't go with Egin Ahar. I don't know if you know what that means, but something called Egin Ahar. That means women shave their heads. That's the main Akpada. If the women don't check, the husband, the wives of the Shechita. Okay, now, if you don't have, if your wife's over there hanging a har, forget it. You're out completely. One of the important things about shrita is that the shochtim will go do tefillin in the morning. There's another thing. The shrita itself is not all that different. The shochtim are not supposed to touch their beards, things like that. Nothing. The shrita itself, there's no difference today between shrita and santa shrita.
It's like a borrowed term.
What?
It's a borrowed term.
They say the makpid a little more in this, makpid a little more in this. There's really no difference theoretically between a chassidus shrita and a mesagdus shrita. Once upon a time, there was the knives. Today, that doesn't exist. Bechlal. There are differences in the shochtim. The shochtim in the chassidus shrita, you have the chassidus shrita. You can't have a little shrita chassidus shrita. When I started my shrita, so that was one of the tightest that, I can have a nada, because we're doing chassidus shrita also. So I have certain biches, or bells, and so then, yeah. Okay, I made it through somehow.
Between svara shechita and
not in chickens, not in chickens. Chickens are the same thing, more or less. There are better and there are worse. Even the mahadrin shechitas that I was talking about, there are some that do a very, very good job, some who cut corners a little bit. It's a very delicate thing, Do you check 12 a minute or 9 a minute, or do you have a lot of different possibilities? How many shochet do you have on a line? How often do you check the knife on the line? There are different nuances in all these different things. Yes.
In Orbach Shchita, is it is that called Rabbanut? Is it called, what is it called?
Orbach Shchita is an Ov Tov in Tverya. That is a Rabbanut Shchita. It used to be the worst shchita in the country. Today, it's a very decent shchita. I was there. When I went there, the shchita I was talking about, the beginning of this year.
What about today?
Today, it's a decent shchita. It's not what we call mahadrin shchita. It's a chalak. They don't check lungs all the time. They don't check someone's again all the time. I was there about a year ago, and it was way, way improved. It was really, but it's not what I call a mahadrin shchita. It's probably just about one of the best not mahadrin shchitas there are. But it's not a mahadrin shchita. It's not what I call a mahadrin shchita.
And that gets exported.
That's right.
It's the same hechsher. It's the same shchita.
Not necessarily. You can have the same mashchita. You can have a tzevet of mashgichim coming, and generally speaking, you do.
So, like Ov Tov in America.
It depends who's giving the hechsher on it. Look at the hechsher. If it's a mahadrin hechsher, they do it. I don't know if today Ov Tov. Oh yeah, I think they do actually. But most of the shchita that goes to Chutzaris today doesn't come from Ov Tov. There's a mashchita in the south, a gigantic, gigantic mashchita. Most of the shchita in America comes to America, goes from there. I think even the stuff that goes from Ktira Tzvi, that all goes from I was there actually because they wanted me to check the stuff to go to America. That's how I got to the mashchitot. But it mostly doesn't come from Ov Tov anymore. I don't think so. Maybe it does. I'm not sure. Yes?
You wrote at the beginning that person should try to have
You have to ask around. People are asking many times. I don't want to talk about it here. I don't think it's proper for me to talk about it here because, first of all, I have my, personal the thing. I worked at different places. I saw different things. And the truth is, my knowledge today is a little stale. I still tell people what I think, but I don't feel as comfortable. So when I was really working every day and I saw them all, Bamakom, and I knew all the Mashgichim and all the Rabbonim, and I knew exactly what was happening, I felt very confident about what I was saying. Today, my confidence is not quite what it used to be, number one. And also, I don't want to say the Rabbim. I don't think it's proper for me to say the Rabbim. Yes.
Teretzvi is all turkey, isn't it?
Salami.
I don't know.
We know their stuff is processed.
I don't know. I don't know exactly. No raw chickens are sent to America. That's for sure. They may have some
here in Israel. When you go to any Asheron or anywhere else, they have these packaged turkeys.
Yeah, okay, it could be. You're probably right. Most of the processed meat in Eretz Yisrael comes from turkeys. That is true. That's true. Yes.
Follow up to this question: is it fair to base it on price? In other words, how mahadrin a shita might be as a consumer.
I wouldn't say that they're exactly correct. Otherwise, everybody just raise the price and say, we're the best shchita in the world. But if you see a shchita that is considerably cheaper then all the other Mahadrin Shechitas, they're probably cutting corners somewhere. Because it costs money to do these things. And I'm not saying that the Mahadrin Shechitas don't make money. They make money, but if you see a very big difference, usually it means they're cutting corners. I can't say 100%, but as a general, they are.
Then why is it before Pesach it goes up, I don't know how much percent?
No.
The price.
Yeah. I haven't failed it. In Eretz Yisrael, I haven't failed it. In America, I think it did. I don't think in Eretz Yisrael it did. Yes.
It sounds silly to ask this, but aside from mikvah, do they either tefillahs they say or brachas they say before they do
shechita? Yeah, before you shechita, make a bracha.
For the whole day.
Well, yeah. It's actually a question as to how you make a shechita bracha at the beginning of the day, and 4 hours later you're doing the same bracha. There's a big machlok, is a very, very long prima gadam about an archayim and your idea. They talk about it very, very much. Theoretically, the shochet is supposed to be quiet, not be mafsik. But they all are, and the maisa, usually they make one bracha.
And is it technically permissible for a woman?
Technically, yes, l'maisa, no. The first halach in Shulchan Aruch and Yerideya says, everybody's kosher, and it says, in Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, it says women shouldn't shecht. L'maisa, I have never seen a woman shecht. Technically, the Mishnah says they can. First of all, I don't know how many women want to shecht, number one. Maybe that's part of the reason. But technically, a woman can shecht, may shecht. But practically, no mashrita would ever allow a woman to shecht. And lemaisa, the big machlok is a poskim, exactly when, how, where, and lemaisa women don't shecht. Yes?
If one finds a kidney in the thigh of a Mahadran chicken, should they be
consumed? No, you take it out, you can eat it. Lemaisa, you can eat it. There are many, many, there are some Mahadran shritis that don't take kidneys out of the chalal. Rav Landa once upon a time didn't, I think he does now. But it's a low sofa olam. There's a prima gadam who says you should, but it's kosher b'diavad b'chol mikre. Okay? Okay, I think it's on the mind just about now. Okay, Baruch Hashem.